What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of Teeing It Up with CNV, the number one sports podcast in Southeast Metro Detroit. I'm the C himself, Connor, as always, with my co-host, Vladdy, the V himself. What's going on, man? A little later recording this week. What's up?
Not much. I'm still employed, which is cool. Not everyone at GD can say that. We had a round of layoffs this week, so I've got some other frustrations about how much these things are being handled, but it could always be worse. They could have walked me out the building yesterday, so can't
They
complain.
actually walk you out? That's crazy.
Oh, so I didn't see any of this because apparently it was mostly in one of the other buildings, but there's just a security guy walking around tapping people on the shoulder and just kind of like staring at him saying like, don't make a scene, just get your shit and go.
Wow.
That's what I was told. I didn't see any of it, but yeah.
I guess that's how you do it at big companies, but even that feels
Yeah,
interesting.
thanks for however long you gave us. Sayonara. Yeah, it's kind of
Don't
crazy.
make a scene. It's like the I've seen have you ever seen those like things online of like if you get cut off at a bar and they just hand you a little note
Yeah,
that
it's like
says,
you can leave quietly or you can leave loudly. It's like pick your poison. Can't say I've
that's
ever
kind of
seen
what it
that,
reminds
but
me of.
yeah.
No, I've never seen that personally, but those always make me chuckle.
Yeah, how are you?
Anything else with you, man?
No, not nothing really. Did we lose Connor again? This is going to be sad. He's on some Walmart Wi-Fi, everyone. I wonder when we're going to get him back. We're just frozen for a minute. Turn your camera off. See if you can fo focus more of the Wi-Fi on the
How
audio.
about now?
I mean, we hear you. I guess we'll see if you're frozen or not. But how are you?
Do you come keep com I'm good if you can hear me. Just got back from my one trip of the summer, which is nice, but it has been kind of harder than normal this week because it is I'm slightly over halfway now, for the bar prep, so I definitely had Monday, Tuesday, had some hard time getting back to just the Groundhog's Day grind that this has been. It has not been my most productive week in general because of that. But no complaints. Like I said, kind of just Groundhog's Day, going through the motions of getting closer. So nothing really new on that front. I guess we can kind of get into it for today. We've got another mixed bag of topics as we kind of officially hit the off season now, with the basketball and the hockey now being over. So we're going to get into today. We're going to talk about some soccer. We're going to talk about the Tigers. We'll talk about the NBA drafts, some NBA trades, and we'll preview. I'll do a brief preview on tomorrow's NHL draft. So, not necessarily the heaviest of topics for you, but we've got a mixed bag and should be good episodes. So, where do you want to start today?
Let's start with the Tigers. They have not been talked about at all. Let's give them some love.
Yeah, it's kind of bad that, or sad that we're talking about them now. They're 6-7 in their last 13, have kind of played not necessarily awful, but very mediocre baseball. They have kind of caused the injury bug with the pitching staff. Jackson Jobe is the biggest name. Their young prospect goes down with Tommy John. You probably won't see him till 2027 at this point, and probably mid 2027 at that. Casey Mize has spent a lot of the season injured. He kind of came back a couple weeks ago and has not really been the same player he was in April. Before the injury, and then Reese Olson, which has kind of been your, as far as output, been your number two behind Skubal, has been out for now an extended period of time. So that starting pitching staff is kind of mangled right now. It is kind of giving off vibes of what they were doing in August, where it was Skubal and Reese Olson, and then basically bullpen games for the other three. They haven't necessarily done that. They've gone out with somewhat of a normal rotation with Skubal, Jack Flaherty, Mize, and then have kind of thrown in Montero into that four spot, and then done one or two bullpen games in between. But it is the weakness of the best team in baseball when you have to find one, because they're missing everything but maybe two starting pitchers and a third baseman right now. And I don't know if you could say that the way, Zach McKinstry has played for a lot of this season. They're going to have to stay with the pitching staff. Skuball has been Skuball. I think that we talked about him briefly in that he's been somehow better this year and is not getting nearly the notoriety he is, just because there's other names like Paul Skeens is honestly having a better season than him, even his Cy Young season. He did get rocked yesterday or two nights ago. That he gave up 4 and 6 innings, which isn't the worst thing in the world, but they did win the game 11-4. With the lineup, I mean, they could have anywhere from 2 to 5 all-stars on this team, and that's crazy when you talked about this lineup last year having that. The craziest part is one of those names is Javier Baez, who has worked his way into being the second most voted center fielder. And you've kind of seen him take more of a go back to that shortstop role with Trey Sweeney really struggling at the plate. And they have a really good shortstop prospect coming up, so we'll see what they do with that. But it'll be interesting to see if he makes it, what position he makes it in. He's kind of stayed hot. He loves that spot in like the 7 hole in the lineup, and he's been a revolving door and has been receptive to a lot of things. And then you look at Riley Green, you go up in the order, you have Riley Green, who's arguably one of the better hitters in baseball this year, batting 280. He strikes out a ton, but he's going to hit 30 home runs this year, or near 30 home runs this year, and bat 280 and have an 850 OPS. Nothing you complain about there. He'll be an all-star. Across the diamond, Gleyber Torres, who was one of the pickups this offseason at second from the Yankees for only $8 million. He's played above and beyond expectations. He's the number one second baseman in all-star voting right now, batting well over 280, well into June now, and would probably be talked a lot of. Is, I think, one of the things on this team that is not talked about enough is his performance at the top of the lineup, hitting one or two, and then also being like him and Baez are the only two people really above the age of like 27 on that roster. Behind the plate, Dylan Dingler batting 270 from the catcher side. He got a name you didn't really expect much out of. You thought Jake Rogers would be taking most of the duties this year. He stepped in, and for a catcher to be batting 270 in today's baseball, it's pretty rare. Unfortunately, Cal Riley is on pace to break Aaron Judge's AL home run record from 2 years ago. Otherwise, he would be the starting catcher for the AL. But I don't know. Cal Riley also plays in Seattle, so no one's ever heard of him. So yeah, they were the first. There's not much to complain about, even though they've kind of had a mediocre stretch here, and the schedule's kind of heated up a little bit. They're gonna have a big series against a couple of division opponents, mostly the Twins this weekend. They're the first team to 50 wins, and I don't think anybody thought that was gonna be the case going into this year. And they just need starting pitching to get healthy. They need Jack Flaherty to turn his song, get traded to the Dodgers, win a World Series.
Uh-oh, did we lose
There's
Connor
all
again?
stars all around this team. What?
It sounded like you cut out for a bit over the last maybe 30 seconds.
Oh, okay. So, well, I'll just end with I didn't think they'd be the first team to 50 wins. They are. So, as much as this mediocre stretch can be frustrating, you got to like where they're at right now. And they're going to get healthy. All these young players have performed. The veterans have come in and done their job. And it's a great day to be a Tigers fan. I think I said it a couple weeks ago. I don't really see them being anywhere in this kind of mediocre stretch. Doesn't really change that too much for me.
Yeah, I think maybe the best encapsulation I can have is the Tigers are good enough that we went down to a game 2 weeks ago with friends, and that was my first time in Comerica Park in probably 6 years. So
Wow.
I think that's the best way of like showcasing, like it was a Tuesday night game against the Pirates and neither Skeens nor Skuball was on the mound, so you really had no reason to ever be there. But we went because we could. And so I think that, again, that's the perfect example. You go and you support the teams when they're good. You can get in for cheap. I got a physical ticket. I don't think I've done that in a decade. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, there's my Tigers recap. Not as intuitive as Connor's.
Went to baseball game.
Yeah,
Good. Very good baseball.
baseball
But
good. They use stick, hit ball far.
stick hit ball. Throw ball hard as you can.
Yes. Where do you want to go
End
next?
quote.
Basketball or hockey?
I can take over do the hockey real quick. It won't
Okay.
be a ton since it's not till tomorrow. So the NHL draft tomorrow, Friday. Today, as we're listening to it, what won't be the sexiest draft for? I mean, I'm sure you'll get into it with the Pistons. Is the Red Wings are going to pick, I believe, 14th this year. So there's not a ton, 13th, sorry. There's not a ton of buzz around what they're going to do. I mean, you're not going to see some superstar as far as what I think they should do. You do need to go, and they won't do this because Yzerman doesn't like doing this. He'll just take another European player, but they need to go and get the most skilled goal scoring guy on the board. I don't care if he's projected in the 30s because he's too small. I don't care if he just slipped because he's got a bad attitude. What you've kind of developed with these quote unquote, I'm making the quotation marks, good prospect pool is a lot of good two-way forwards. Like Nate Danielson in Grand Rapids seems like a good two-way centerman. Marco Casper is a guy who seems like a good two-way forward. And you've kind of built that mold, and then you already have the young defensemen with Seider and Edmondson, to where not knowing too much about this defensive pool besides what's at the top, I don't really see the need to go get another defenseman. You have Axel Sundin and Palinka, who hopefully will be on the opening day roster this year, from Sweden that you drafted, I think, 18th overall 2 years ago. So I want to see them go and get your skill guy. And I know those 50 goal scorers seem to really only be in the top four or five picks usually, but they're out there sometimes, and you do have to kind of take a risk. And you, in Yzerman's position, what do you have to lose, really? Like, it's what you've been, everybody trusts. The one thing everybody does actually trust you for is your draft picks. So, why? I don't think if you went and got a guy that was maybe projected 10 picks lower than what you picked him at because he was too small or something like that, that people would be up in arms about it. And that's kind of where I see, as far as what he's drafted in his, 6 or 7 years here, them needing to fill to the top. It's kind of turned into a consensus number one. It wasn't always that. It's pretty much like 80% going to be this Matthew Schaefer kid from the OHL. It's a good year to be a hockey player from Ontario. Pretty much, I think four of the top five are going to be from the OHL. Schaefer is a big defenseman. I really was impressed with him at the World Juniors in Canada, for Team Canada, sorry, over the holiday. The only thing I've heard that this might not be is that the Islanders are kind of fascinated with the idea of that the only American that's kind of projected at the top is James Higgins, who was a freshman at BC this past year. He's a Long Island kid and grew up like a lifelong Islanders fan. And there's apparently some nostalgia with that. But I've also seen most of the stuff I've seen has Higgins, who was projected to kind of be the 1-2 with Schaefer, now being in that 4-5 slot. And the other kids I've seen, these OHL kids, Michael Misa, Anton Frundell from Sweden, are going to be the guys that you kind of see go 2, 3, or 4 instead. I've seen Higgins as low as 7, actually, in some of them. It's not a huge year for Americans. It's not our best NTDP team. You didn't really see a ton of freshmen that are draft eligible light it up. I'll shout out my boy Cullen Potter from Arizona State. He's probably one of the only ones that'll get to do that. He'll be somewhere in the 18 to 22 range. But other than that, not a ton of Americans at the top, which is good because the Red Wings don't like to pick Americans. I think they've only picked in the Yzerman first round, not counting the goalie. They've only picked one non-European in his 6 drafts so far. And that was Nate Danielson 3 years ago now, who is a Canadian. So no Americans. And he famously passed on Cole Iserman last year. So we'll see. That's what I would like the Red Wings to do. That's what the top is looking like. And let's get into a draft that actually happened, because there's more to talk about when it actually happens.
Sure, but before we do that, we do have to recap the end of the NBA Finals because it has been that long since we've spoken.
Yeah, I was like, I'm pretty sure we have that too, but
Yeah, so the NBA was set up for its first Game 7 in 9 years, and unfortunately, all of it was taken away from us in the first 5 minutes.
yeah.
Tyrese Haliburton came out white hot, and I mean white hot. He came out playing the way you expect a superstar to play. He was aggressive, assertive, unstoppable. It was run through him. Whereas if you look at some of those other games, especially early in that series, he took maybe two shots in the first half. He had five or six up, I think, in the first couple minutes. And then he tries to explode off the dribble, falls down right away, slapping the floor in pain, and you knew exactly what happened. There, you didn't need a doctor, you didn't need the Pacers to come out 24 hours later to tell you that he ruptured an Achilles. You knew in the moment, you watched him sitting there punching the ground, and that was kind of it. I mean, I guess credit to the Pacers who hung in pretty well after that. They did rally around the fact that he got hurt. There wasn't necessarily quit, it's just they couldn't score with the Thunder, and that really caught up to him at the end of that game. I guess kudos to the Thunder. They have every right to believe that they might be the last ever dynasty in Adam Silver's NBA. They were a historically great team. They have a dude from last year in Europe who hasn't even made the roster yet. They have two firsts. They have four other firsts the year after, and still have, I want to say, 13 total first round picks, and 10 of them are tradable, I believe. So it's ridiculous how stocked this team is to go for that long haul and to try and kind of repeat as a champion after having seven different ones in 7 years. But what's equally funny is that there's not really a defining moment for this team. Like, they were historically great. You look at the teams that have won the most games ever, they won 68 games in the regular season and 84 games total. I believe they're only one of two or three teams to ever win 84 plus games and win the title. Emphasis on win the title, because the 2016 Warriors, I think, won 88 games and couldn't finish the job in the playoffs, which is incredibly unfortunate. But there wasn't some exciting style of basketball that people are going to look back and remember the way, let's say, the Warriors played. There wasn't this LeBron or Jokic or Giannis superstar that people can go back and look at. You didn't have a defining moment like a LeBron block or a Ray Allen three or Kawhi bouncing a ball around the rim for half an hour before it finally falls. You just had this team that was historically great and still somehow seems underappreciated. Maybe it's the lack of whistle that, or the difference in whistle, where every single time you touched them, it was a foul. Meanwhile, you had, I think it was Jalen Williams, quite literally holding the arm of TJ McConnell. And then you look at TJ McConnell looking at the refs like, are you going to do something about this? And the ref just sits there staring at it, letting it go. Maybe it's that. I don't know what it is, but this team, for how good they were statistically, record-wise, and for all of the kind of the treasure chest that they have for future roster building, there's no, I don't think there's any respect for them, which is crazy to say.
I agree. I do you think that's just because I think it's a combination of the two things. Well, one thing you said, one thing. I think it's the market thing, and I think it's the no. As good as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is, he's a, like, did he end up winning the MVP?
He did, even though
That's
he
what I
shouldn't
mean.
have. It should have been
Yes,
Jalen Williams, but that's okay.
but as the season MVP.
Oh yeah, he did win that.
Okay.
He's no,
As good
sorry,
as he
I should say one
was.
thing. He's one of, I think, three or four people to ever win scoring title, MVP, and finals MVP in the same season.
Yeah, which is it's crazy to me, but like, you still don't think of him. Maybe he does this for another 5 years, you will, and this team will gain, future notoriety because of that. But I think it's like, I do think it's the superstar name. You got to have a memorable name on that roster. Although, like, I think I remember the Celtics team more than, granted, It was just last year, but I thought of that team more of a dynasty than this team.
Are
And
you saying
this
there's
team
just,
did the exact same thing.
you saying there's too many syllables in his name? He just doesn't roll off the tongue.
Maybe, but like as someone that casually watches like maybe a few playoff games and a few Pistons games throughout the season and follows along for the drama of it, really, I didn't know who Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was until this year, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I can't necessarily blame you. All right, so I think that's what we've established. If you have too many syllables in your name, can't be a superstar.
Karl Anthony Towns, done.
But I was never a superstar. Get
No,
that soy boy out of here. But
yeah,
no,
it's just
the other topic, and obviously talked about it with
get that
Halliburton, was
zesty guy out of here.
with the injuries. This has become a big topic in the kind of the aftermath of the playoffs, because it wasn't just Halliburton. Jason Tatum tore an Achilles.
I think it was seven they said this year.
Yeah, I mean, Damian Lillard tore his Achilles in these playoffs. Steph Curry with a hamstring injury. Aaron Gordon with a hamstring injury. You had some serious injuries, and right off the bat, I think people are going to start treating a calf strain differently than they used to, because that even before this year, that's kind of how Kevin Durant tore his Achilles. Was he was playing on a calf strain in the NBA Finals, and it's the NBA Finals, so obviously you're going to play, but you come out and you go pop and you lose a year of your career. So I think they're going to start becoming a lot more cautious. I'm not saying Halliburton shouldn't have played, because it's game seven. How you can't not play. He's already come out saying I would do it again in a heartbeat if I needed to, because I went out there and I tried to fight for a team. I get that, but I think that I saw one tweet, and like, to an extent, I understand the principle. I don't know if I agree with the messages. They should start treating calf strains like a concussion. You just quite literally are not allowed to play on them. And again, I don't agree with that, but you watch what happens, and it always starts like that. Tyrese Halliburton played games 4, 5, and 6 with a calf strain. Jason Tatum played with a calf strain. I'm sure Damian Lillard played with some kind of calf strain, but it's just the body, when something is messed up, will have other functions try and overcorrect, and the Achilles will overcorrect for the calf. And the problem is, the Achilles is it's the easiest thing to snap, and it when it goes, it goes. And so that's unfortunate that you kind of have to talk about that. The other thing, and I didn't necessarily see much of this, but I did see it as a topic, is people talking about shortening the season. Is a way to try and maybe limit the wear and tear on these playoffs, or these players, especially come playoffs. And while I don't think you can do that, Adam Silver has shown that he is very progressive. He is willing to try anything to spice up the sport. So I could absolutely see a scenario where maybe they bring it down to 62, 65 games or 72. And I know we always love throwing this around with expansion, and the owners want more money, so maybe it gets shortened in a different way. But I wouldn't be shocked if they found some way, some compromise. One thing that I thought of, which I think makes sense, is you have a 3-0 sweep. That is essentially what it sounds like. If you go up 3-0 on somebody, series ends.
Interesting. I don't know if I like that.
I don't either, but I guess the argument for it is, if you haven't won any of the first three games, then it's under the assumption that you're probably the weaker team. You're the one who just played game three at home. If you lost game three at home after losing games one and two, you really going to take the next four with two of them being on the road? I mean, you already
No,
don't come
yeah.
back from 3-1. Are you coming back from 3-0?
Right.
So I think that's the argument for it. I don't know. Again, I don't know if I support it, but it's something I thought of, if they needed to try and quote unquote shorten the amount of impactful games that these guys are playing and try and keep them fresher. So throw that out there, but I don't know. Speaking of Achilles injuries in the past, Kevin Durant has a new team. That was probably not the best way to segue to the Kevin Durant trade, but I saw it next on my notes, and we were talking injuries and load management. So I said, screw it, I'm trying to make a joke. He was traded to the Rockets for Jalen Green, the number 10 pick, and then Dylan Brooks, and I guess 5 second-round picks that'll never actually be made by Phoenix. I'm sure they'll just be traded, and I think they've already started trading them to kind of trade up in the draft. The Rockets get their big star piece. They're going to try and become the, what, ninth team to win a championship, or are we at seven? Or The Rockets essentially trying to be that next team in the line of new champions without any repeats. I don't really have much to say on this from the Rockets side other than that. Like, you needed your piece. You kind of saw it with the Warriors series where they didn't have a stud. They could defend, but they couldn't score. They were energetic and young, but they couldn't score. And so he'll be that guy. And from the Suns' perspective, it had to be done. You had to trade one of Kevin Durant or Devin Booker, and it wasn't going to be the younger of the two. So I think from a owner slash wannabe general manager standpoint, I think Matt Ishbia got a great crash course in the David Tepper school of you are an owner, not a general manager. Leave the basketball to the basketball people, and you stick to selling mortgages. It is what it is. I mean, you look at the asset management of what they gave up for Kevin Durant, what they achieved with Kevin Durant, and what they've turned around and sold Kevin Durant for. It leaves a lot to be desired. So I would say that's kind of the Phoenix part. That's your biggest trade you had. Other than that, you had Boston make a flurry of moves to get under the second apron. Kristaps Porzingis was sent to Atlanta. Jrue Holiday was sent back to Portland. Yeah, that's kind of there where this is part of Adam Silver's how we keep the teams equal and competitive or not being too good for too long. You just make it exponentially more expensive for the owners, and that's good. I forget the exact numbers, but the Celtics were going to be somewhere around $540 million between salary cap and luxury tax, and then they traded away those two players, and now they're down to, I think, 280. So you traded away two players who I think were making a combined maybe $60 or $70 million, maybe a little more, 80, let's say, to be more, I guess, conservative. And you save $240 million overall in luxury taxes. So that's kind of maybe the perfect epitome of how the league has evolved and how these teams are not designed to stay good for long, and how the Thunder are perfectly built to beat that because they can keep their guys on cheap contracts the whole time. That's kind of
Somebody
the,
has to.
yeah, that's the movement aspect into the actual draft, which might be happening as we speak right now in terms of round two, but even by pick 15, we're talking about guys nobody's ever heard of, and one of them who is sitting in the goddamn stands. So that'll be an entertaining story. But I think for starters, ESPN slash the NBA are massive failures for how they handle and promote their stuff. I didn't even know the draft was this week until about 3 or 4 days ago. And I understand the season's still going on. I think we talked about this either on the pod or just off air when we were just hanging out or something. But it is a little different when you have your season still going on, and like we compare it to the NFL, where obviously they've been done for 2 months and then they hook you right back in the draft. But the NFL markets their draft, and you get 700,000 people to converge onto a city. The NBA just doesn't have that power. In part of it, they never will. It's just basketball's not that loved, but I think part of it is ESPN just does an awful job of promoting this, and I look forward to seeing what NBC and Amazon are going to do in the next iteration of the league. But the actual draft, it was the Cooper Flagg sweepstakes, a prospect one step below generational. We all know what happened with the Luka trade, and then the winning of the lottery. You guys can't see me do the air quotes, but we all know what happened there. Don't need to do that. Let's just actually get to the draft. Flag number one, he is another kind of lengthy guy, and that Mavs team is going to be scary on defense. Anthony Davis, Derek Lively, Daniel Gafford, Cooper Flagg, those guys are going to be everywhere. It's a no-brainer pick. Number two, Dylan Harper, the second best prospect in the draft, can score at all three levels, who does still have kind of that elite upside, and kind of a no-brainer pick for the Spurs. There were questions and maybe rumors that the Spurs would use number two and maybe a Stephon Castle or and a Devin Vassell, and maybe try and trade a couple other picks for Giannis and build just the twin towers of Giannis Antetokounmpo and Victor, I'm a monk now, Wembanyama. I don't know if you've seen those pictures.
No.
He spent the last like 2 weeks in just like Chinese monasteries. It's insane.
Oh, interesting.
He's got
Okay.
a shaved head too. It's ridiculous.
Okay,
So,
good for him, I guess.
yeah, good. If it, look, that's the Greg Popovich way. Find your zen, find your inner peace, and go crazy. Even though Pop's not the coach anymore. But yeah, the third pick, I guess, was VJ Edgecombe. It was probably supposed to be Ace Bailey, and we will talk
Yeah, what
about.
was he doing?
So I actually have a potential just trying to understand what he did and maybe how he approached it. But yeah, it was just, let's just get into Ace Bailey. So
Yeah.
he was clearly the third best prospect in the draft. He was looked at all the way in the lead up as this borderline KD light. He was listed at
Right.
6'10". He could handle, he could shoot from multiple levels. And you said, you know what? If this guy puts it together, you're looking at Kevin Durant light. And then come combine time, he gets measured with no shoes and he's actually 6'7". And that's not short by any means, but that's not the mythical unicorn.
Right.
That's just a wing player. So you lost a little bit of your hype, your aura, and your ceiling there if you're Ace Bailey. And then he proceeded to talk to zero teams and work
Nobody.
out for zero teams in the pre-draft process, which I'd never seen that strategy. It dropped him from 3 to 5, not exactly a massive drop, but did cost him, I think, $5-10 million in kind of the rookie scaling contract, which.
Well, and didn't he want to go six? He wanted to go to the Washington.
Yeah, I think he had a list. I think the Jazz Wizards, and there might have been like a Brooklyn out there who were his part of his preferred teams. And so
Okay.
he must have just been told, hey, we're going to take you here, do whatever you can. It was a very unique process of trying to approach the draft. I think that it was absolutely deliberate. The money that he lost, who cares? These guys already come into college with as a millionaire. Forget about what they make in their year of college. So that doesn't necessarily matter. And if he feels that he's going to have better kind of growth and a better fit outside of the top three, I mean, I can't fault him for it. I just don't know if I agree with the concept of not working out for a single team in the draft. I think. I was reading that a lot of professional agents are going to be closely studying his next 3, 4, 5 years and just trying to say, hey, is this a path I want to take with my guys? And just say, look, people who usually pick at the top of the draft are there for a reason. They're dysfunctional and they're a mess. And if you can find yourself in a slightly better, albeit still dysfunctional, organization or situation, if you feel like you have a better fit at 5 than 2 or 5 than 4, do whatever you can to get yourself down to 5. So I understand the principle of what he did and why he did it. I just don't know if I agree with it.
Right.
But yeah, so rest of the draft, I mean, it was kind of the freshman show. Con Knipple went 4, just sharpshooter out of Duke. You had Trey Johnson in Texas, Jeremiah Fears at 7. And Jeremiah Fears, honestly, the biggest story I had there was just how Stephen A. Smith tried to talk about him. He kind of pulled a Mel Kiper with Shedeur Sanders, where he just started screaming at teams for not drafting Fears earlier. And then he called
Really?
Fear. Oh, dude. He called Fears Kyrie Irving. And then Bob Myers, the former Warriors GM who was sitting next to him, was like, hold on a second here. Did I just hear you correctly? And then Stephen A does what Stephen A does and just starts screaming, no, no. And
Yeah.
you know how his voice starts to get higher when he screams too?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did that. And he's like, no, you're putting words out of my mouth. And it's like, I thought it was an awful kind of showing for Stephen A. Smith. It was not quite Mel Kiper levels. But it was borderline. It's kind of one of those where it's like, I understand you pay him all this money, but just please stop. Like find just let him go deal with his aspiring political career. The NBA and sports, I think, can move past the likes of a Stephen A. Smith. Back to the actual draft, Igor Demin at 8, Colin Murray-Boyles 9. If these names mean nothing to you, that's great. They don't mean much to me either. The third freshman from Duke, Malach, he had a pretty cool story where he didn't even play basketball until 5 or 6 years ago. Some guy in South Sudan was like, hey, you're tall as shit. come to this Luol Deng camp at NBA Africa, and he showed up and he played well and he enrolled in their little kind of program there, and he ended up at Duke 5 years later. So
Yeah.
that was a really cool
I'm always so
story.
wary. I know he was a solid player for them, but like I'm looking at his stats. He started every game, 22 minutes a game, but a guy that's only 6 rebounds, 8.5 points a game. I know Con Canepo and Cooper Flagg. It's just those are the type of guys sometimes the NBA bothers me. It's so much projection with freshmen. It's
Yeah, and
just crazy
it's a
to me.
lot of just, oh, they do love draft more than any of, and all the leagues love the concept of the prospect, because you can't teach
Yeah.
hype. We can teach you how to play our style of whatever sport we're talking about. So I
It's
understand.
amplified in basketball, I
Yeah,
think,
yes.
though.
Basketball is the worst at drafting a prospect over drafting a player. But yeah, there was kind of a run on big men. They talked about it. They're like, maybe this is the overcorrection, kind of like how running backs went from, oh my God, nobody wants this guy 4 years ago, to now everyone plays two high safeties on defense, which means there's one less guy in the box, which means I'm gonna run all over you. And suddenly running backs are cool again and they're getting drafted higher. But you kind of had an overcorrection. There were a ton of centers drafted in the first round, and they were kind of over the last 4 or 5 years. If you were in a stretch five, you weren't getting drafted. So that was interesting to see. Down the board, I don't even want to start talking about the rest of these names just because it's kind of frustrating. I'll stop and talk about 16, the Grizzlies drafted and then traded to the Trailblazers. So effectively, the Trailblazers draft a Chinese center named Yang Hansen, and he came down from the crowd. It was awesome. He wasn't sitting at the table with his family coming up. He went down. It was so funny to see.
It's funny because that, like, I know that none of the other drafts are like that, but that's what the NHL is. Like, you sit in the stands and get called.
That's pretty cool. But yeah, so that was another one of the kind of the funny stories of the night.
9 foot 3 wingspan.
Yeah, this guy's he they called him a baby Jokic. So we'll see. After that, in terms of maybe the quote unquote local guys, Jace Richardson went to 25 or fell down to 25. You want to kind of like Ace Bailey, where they measured him without shoes on and he measured in pretty much at like 6 feet
Even,
and
yeah.
half an inch. That kind of killed him, because he went from, I'm already an undersized off-ball guard, to, holy shit, I am a very, very short
Small,
off-ball
even
guard.
point
Yeah.
guard, yeah.
And that's kind of why you saw him go from borderline top 10 pick towards the end of the season when he was leading that charge for Michigan State into the tournament, to now he's at the back end of the draft in the first round. So it is what it is.
It didn't surprise me. That's kind of where I thought he should be, to be honest, as good
I
as he
agree.
was.
I agree. Like, I mean, we talked about it. He's short and he does have the athleticism to try and stay with some of those guys, but I didn't think he was 6 feet flat short. So
Right.
that's tough. Other local guy, but for the bad boys, the bad team, Danny Wolf goes to the Nets at 27. Not much to say there. It's cool. Whatever. The Nets made, I
All
think,
right.
5 picks in the first round, and apparently they were all awful. So you got that
They took
going for
a guard from Israel before that. They took a guard from France before that. And they took the BYU guard. They took four guards
them.
to.
And most of them are foreign because Demin's the Russian kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, that's kind of it. The Pistons didn't have a first round pick. I think I mentioned this. They finally had to convey that first round pick from the Jalen Duren trade to the New York Knicks, and then New York traded it to somebody else. They'll be picking at 37. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I even know who's on the board, so no need to continue that.
Jaden Akins.
Okay.
Left-handed sharpshooter.
Oh,
6'2".
sharpshooter at what?
Sharpshooter his first 2 years of college.
Sure. Yeah.
But
That's
wasn't
kind of
forced
what I
to.
got with the NBA draft. Yeah. Anything from you before we move on, when we switch sports one last time?
Not really. It always fascinates me with the NBA, and this kind of goes back to my prospect thing, is like how much you've never even heard of these, especially the college names, aside from like the Dukes. And like, I heard of Kasperis Jakachonis because they played state. I heard of Danny Wolf because he went to Michigan, but like, I had never heard of the Penn State guy that went at 30. He was a third year player. He went to NIU the 2 years before that. Like Walter Clayton was the best player in basketball. I know he's like 27, but he went 18. But I'm always just wowed by these boards sometimes at how many few names I recognize. And I know there's a fair bit of Europeans on there, but that's my take on the NBA draft pretty much every year, more and more so, I feel like, as time goes on.
I agree. I guess to the soccer, to the Club World Cup, I think this is like almost perfect timing when we're recording this, where we have established pretty much six of the eight round of 16 ties. All that's left is the Real Madrid group has to play tonight. Real Madrid actually might not be playing because there's apparently storms in Philadelphia, so we'll see what happens there. But you kind of have a quote unquote hell side of the bracket, and then you have a fun side of the bracket in a sense. On the fun side, your first matchup is Palmeiras against Botafogo, which are two Brazilian rivals, so that's going to be a very entertaining game. You have them playing, or the winner of that will play against the winner of Chelsea versus Benfica. Not exactly a lot of firepower there. The matchup below them is Inter versus Fluminense, and then the matchup below that, which will be playing the winner of Inter and Fluminense, is Manchester City against whoever finishes second in the Real Madrid group. And right now it's wide open. There are three teams fighting for two spots, so can't really predict much. PSG versus Inter Miami lead off your quote unquote top part of your hell side of the bracket. Right below them is Bayern versus Brazilian team Flamengo. Below them is Borussia Dortmund against Mexican team Monterrey. And right below is the winner of the Real Madrid group versus Juventus. So you kind of have, I would probably say, under, let me rephrase, because Real Madrid haven't qualified yet. I'm going to be tempting fate as I say this. But should Real Madrid beat Salzburg or tie Salzburg and Al Hilal does not win by X amount of goals? I think it's three or four. Real Madrid will be group winners and they'll be taking on Juventus in kind of the quote unquote hell side of the bracket. And that would give you three of the four best teams on one side of the bracket. You would have five European teams on one side of the bracket. And the other side just has a lot of meh alongside Man City. So that's
Would
kind
you
of how.
rather play Juventus or Man City in the first round, though?
I mean, it's not really a would you rather. Fate will probably give us Man City. We've played them 4 seasons in a row in the Champions League, so why not play them here? So that's kind of entertaining. I don't know. I mean, look, to be completely honest, you're gonna have to play City eventually because the way this is drawn out, they're gonna be in the final. I don't see how they don't make it, assuming Real Madrid's not there. If we play them, maybe we stop them. Maybe they kick the shit out of us. They've kind of regained their problem, or they fixed their problems, and they've regained their form from this past season where they couldn't beat an egg. And so they are looking good. That they are one of those teams that I kind of included in the quote unquote top four of the tournament, that especially the ones that are left. And we'll see. But the matches will start on Saturday. They have a quote unquote rest day tomorrow. And then they'll play, I think it's two games, two games, two games, and two games each of the following days from Saturday to Tuesday, and then they go right into the quarterfinals after that. And then I want to say there's probably a rest day before the semis, and then you have the end of your tournament on July 13th. But this will obviously be broken down the next time we speak, talk a little bit more about each of the games and at least the ones that have happened, and we'll see where we go from there.
So, not rooting for a result here tonight, just need to win and get in.
I really don't care. Honestly, I mean, I would be sad if we got knocked out because that'd be the last time I ever watch my favorite player play for my favorite team. But I told my opinion on this last week. I hate this tournament. Jude Bellingham should be recovering from shoulder surgery right now. He should not still be playing. And they're going to do a shoulder surgery as soon as he's done. And that's not good because then he's not going to come back until fucking November. So there's the emotional side of the aspect, the sentimental side for me, where I want them to win as much as they can, and so I can watch my favorite player. But at the same time, I don't want these guys playing more games. I want them getting healthy.
No, that made sense, and you went in depth with that on the last podcast. So we don't have to,
Yeah, but we don't need to piss me off
don't
and
need
go
to
down the
kick this
rabbit hole
tournament while
again.
it's down.
Yeah. Any last questions or things that we haven't brought up before we call it?
No, I guess the only thing I can think of in the sports world, because it was kind of also the close, is I don't know if you saw two things that happened Sunday before game seven, is the close of the Travelers. Keegan Bradley gets the win and is now going to, I think he's officially, like with points, going to be a player captain for the Ryder Cup.
I don't
And
think it,
that's a
I didn't think
super
he'd gotten
interesting.
that far yet.
Okay. I thought the win gave secured it. So, or else he's very, very close. He's ranked eighth in the world right now, so it's hard not to put. He has like three top tens
Yep.
in the last like 6 weeks, so it's pretty hard to keep him off that board.
Oh, I
Which I
agree.
mean, I know why they made him the captain, because he got screwed out of last year's team or 2 years ago's team. But it was interesting. I think he's only 39 or 40, like not a guy that's out of it.
No, not a guy that should be a captain.
Right. As much as he is like built for it, he loves it. Like, I think a guy that in 6 or 7 years from now should be a captain. But although, yeah, well, I think he's only a one-time major champion. But anyways, I thought that was cool. Tommy Fleetwood. Did you know Tommy Fleetwood, for as much as he's in the mix, as much as he's talked about, does not have a single PGA Tour victory?
Oh, yeah, he's never won in the US.
He has five European, no US. He's coming second in three of the four master or majors. And he went bogey bogey to absolutely choke that. Keegan Bradley went dead center of the fairway, put a ball to 4 feet. I forget who the third guy in that group was a stroke down. And if Keegan missed to not make birdie, well, Tommy Fleetwood had a stroke lead and bogeyed, and
Yep.
Bradley birdied, and so that he gained the stroke to win. The other guy chipped in from like 15 yards off the green to where if Bradley parred, they would have had a three-way play. It was just a cool finish for a tournament I would have never even thought about, especially a week after a major. And then the other one Sunday, LSU wins the College World Series for college baseball. That's their second and third years. I think it's the SEC's fifth or sixth straight. I believe since 2019, they've won every single one. They beat Coastal Carolina, who's kind of the team of destiny. They were a top 10 team in the country, had won 25 games going into the season. In game two, or the elimination, what ended up being the elimination game, the umpire ejected the Coastal Carolina guy in the first inning of the national championship.
Yep.
That was kind of the big story there. I thought that was a lot. I had strong opinions. I don't think, unless she spits in your face, you can't eject a guy in the first inning of a national championship game. I just thought that was umpiring, thinking they were the stars again, and you can't say it cost them. They lost like 6-3, but go SEC baseball, I guess. That's how I'll close it out.
Yep. I guess, sorry, that last words for me are, I guess, I don't know, go Tigers, keep up the best record in baseball.
Yeah, it's hard. Summer. It's hard to find the what to root for. You know what? I'm gonna say go Jonathan Smith. Figure out what the frick to do with Michigan State football now.